All right, we're off.
Okay. The meeting is called to order at 8:17 a.m. Those in attendance are Yvonne Nass.
Jed Donahue.
Kiara Beck.
Angela Antony.
Karen Grandel.
Mila Duckworth.
Erin Carroll.
Beth Carter.
Courtney Fox.
Dwayne Sims.
Zeke Allenson.
Thank you. Our next item on the agenda is the approval of the March 23rd minutes. Gina Castelli was nice enough to take them. Are there any additions or corrections to those minutes?
Just a small typo. I think Ryan Connell's name is misspelled.
Okay.
Under approval of 223 minutes.
All right. Thank you for taking care of that. Any other corrections, additions? May I hear a motion to accept the minutes as corrected?
So moved.
To accept the minutes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion is passed. Minutes are accepted. Okay. All right, Mr. Finance report, Mr. Zeke. How's our money?
Actually, Mr. Dwayne's going to do
it. Mr. Dwayne's going to do it. Dwayne Sims,
good morning.
How's our money?
Our money is doing very well. Good morning to all. I presume you've all reviewed the finance packet already, so I won't belabor the point. I'll touch on the narrative primarily, but however, if you have any additional questions, comments, or concerns, don't hesitate. That's why we're here. So as you can see, the highlights on the narrative serve that purpose. 99.7% of the total budgeted revenue that we've budgeted for this year has come in. Comparative to our expenses, which are at just over 67%. Of course, we plan on coming pretty much close to where we anticipated and budgeted for the year. A few things that jump out, a few receivables, going back to the revenue, I'm jumping around a little bit here, but we're 75% of the fiscal year, as you can see through the first line on our narrative. Of particular note in the revenue section from our discussion most recently in the finance meeting, cafeteria, miscellaneous funds remaining, some of those same receivables are out there, but nothing of a, it's pretty much nominal amounts. Of course, as we move through, we do, I think the other major point with respect to expenses that I should bring to your attention is that we anticipate that we'll still have some potential savings as well as we move throughout the budget. So I want to bring your attention to the page 3 of 4 of our 9 month actuals and 3 month projected flows as well, so estimates. And this is just obviously for our own edification as we begin to look through these packets on our own and obviously come prepared for our future board meetings. Our final budget fiscal year 17 column, you see an amount in terms of surplus and or deficit at the very bottom, 703024 spot 12. It's a budgeted amount as we went out into the beginning of our set our budget for the school year. As you look towards the far right column, second from the end, totals column is a number of 804. That's an estimate number. So as you see the difference between those two, want to have you keep that in mind, right? If we if those projections that are highlighted in the pink carry true through the remaining of the fiscal year, we should hope to see that number of 804. However, we projected in the final year of 703. So I wanted to make sure I clarified for your purposes as you look through the document, the difference between those two numbers.
And the 804 doesn't include some of the contingencies that we have in there?
That's correct.
So the actual projected number is closer to about 900,000 right now?
Yep. Ideally.
Yeah. So good shape.
And that's, again, keep in mind if we continue to see these things that we projected. And I think it's also worth mentioning as well, if you look just above those columns, so you see total expenditures in green, you see those highlighted items there, capital outlay, renovations, operating contingency, so on and so forth. Those dollar amounts are obviously built into our budget So in when we talk about reserves or we talk about contingencies, those are the operating expenses that we expect to have in the case of emergencies for renovations, so on and so forth. The point being is that we're well capitalized.
So the development committee starts to meet with Karen on Tuesday, or not development, I'm sorry, finance on Tuesday, Tuesday, is that what you said?
May 2nd.
To do the, no, it's not Tuesday, it's Wednesday.
Can't be Tuesday.
Sorry.
We have a lot going on
next
week.
So not Tuesday, right?
Yeah, not Tuesday.
Start doing the, we have 3 and 5 year budget projections that we did in December when we did the modification, but now that we have more information around staffing and students and things, we're going to do a more accurate 3 to 5 year. The 3 year is what we do and keep on file at every step. The 5 year is going to be required for our renewal. So we're going to start working on the two of those. The finance committee will tell you the big piece that I'm pushing right now is to bring our staff salaries up to speed with our local districts. So I've brought that to their attention, and you'll hear me speak of that again. I want to make sure that we are retaining and recruiting, being able to recruit the best teachers around and compensating them similarly to the surrounding districts. And so that's a piece that we are going to be looking at when we do our projections to make sure that we can. So the part-time people, we believe that the salary is, we do, with the associated duties and responsibilities. It's really making sure that we are able to, like I said, recruit and retain the best full-time people. And when we started this, we definitely started way under. And I think that we were extremely lucky to get the talent that we did at that. I told Liz the other day, my dream is that one day we are at or above anywhere else and that everybody's trying to get here to work because we compensate and take care of our teachers
we
so
take
well.
Care of them, yes.
And that's not in the next 3 years. But there's, in my mind, a 10-year plan that has us going, not only do I want to work there because it's an incredible environment, but it's also one of the best paid teaching jobs in the state. So
and I
we're
think
starting those conversations now and starting to lead it so that we keep building it so that there's momentum around it and we can get to that. Again, that only makes sense in those 3 to 5 years if everything else works out the way that we want it to work out. So there's still hesitation. There's still pause. There's still, it's not happening tomorrow.
No, I'm like.
But my point being is that's a part of the conversation now that we're including in our plans and thinking about those 3 to 5 years. So we've begun that conversation. I think we've all said that's really important. That's what I feel like the feedback has been from you guys.
I think we need to honor how difficult this job is to combine two teaching methods and meet the standards that we are meeting. And I think our teachers need to know we're behind them as a board.
Yep.
And so if we can possibly do that, I think it's extremely important.
And when you think about it really in terms of numbers, it, you know, you have 17 lead teachers at the end of, you know, it, you're talking about if everybody's salary goes up by a couple $1,000s, you're not talking about huge amounts of money. Now granted, there are OACs and things like that go into that, but I think that it's doable for us to build to a place where we're at that capacity over, like I said, the next so many years, but it is a part of, we've started that conversation. I just want everybody to know that wasn't part of the conversation in terms of our planning, that it was a priority that we had kind of discussed.
I think it's okay that I jumped on there.
Good.
Also, when bringing in new teachers and requiring them to go get training, that'll be a big
yes, it will.
But the compensation you're going to get is...
Yeah,
you're right, Karen.
Sure, because they're also putting up $10,000, some of them, to go to training.
Okay.
So, hey, come and get paid less and drop 10
yeah.
grand.
But I think also, too, Court, to your point about looking at the surrounding districts, you know, there are opportunities when you are in that environment with plus credits towards, towards your master's and things like that, whereas a Montessori certification is basically a master's but is not yet recognized. So, therefore, recognizing that as well, hopefully the rest of the world will catch up with that. But I think that's something to put into the conversation too, because, that's a lot of time, talent, and energy invested that our children benefit, that the children in the school
and
benefit from.
Hopefully people will continue to lobby for that in the state, so that the state will recognize that down the road. We've talked about that many times, and so we're very aware of that. I'd like to mention that Gina Castelli and Shonda Gilmore have joined us this morning. Welcome.
Glad like I said, my point in bringing it up is just that you know that it's a part of our thought process when we're making decisions. It's not necessarily numbers right now, but it is something that we're building capacity for over time, and it is something that's a priority for us to begin to plan for in our conversation. So obviously, like I said, it's not an immediate, but I did want us to know that it's something that we've talked about in finance that is important right now.
Madam Chair, if we'll indulge in for just a moment to
sure.
mention something. I think as we speak on that, it's very important that we keep in mind, obviously to Courtney's point, the long-term vision, but from a short-term perspective, she led by mentioning those 3 and 5 year financial modifications, projections, with respect to our charter that we're talking about, right? And that's the immediate goal from a financial perspective. Those projections are very important, particularly as we continue to take a look at our bottom line to be able to meet those goals. So that's how they play together, and I just wanted to make sure that I made that connection there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sims.
And I commend finance, though, because it is going to be time for the 5-year review before your eyes even blink, and to be proactive and really scrubbing it at this point in time, I think is fantastic, taking things into consideration that may come our way. So thank you for that, finance.
Questions about the finance report? Any more questions, comments?
I did have one question only on the actual report, and I'm sure we've discussed this in the past, but I don't see a line item for substitutes, but I don't see an actual number. And I know that...
It's under contracted services.
Okay, that's I knew we had discussed it before, and I'm going through it, and I'm going...
Yeah, so. It's a contracted service.
Okay, thank you for explaining that.
We are paying them then.
But okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Dwayne, forgive me if you covered this and I missed it. I know this is a de minimis amount, but what's the negative number with federal funds? Is there
federal funds were all adjusted this year.
Oh, okay.
They get adjusted throughout the year.
Okay.
It's interesting. Ours went down by like $11 or something.
Yeah, right.
Most schools went down by hundreds, if not thousands. Ours was actually really underestimated this year because they didn't take into account our student number growth.
Mm-hmm.
So they're based on your last year's number.
Right.
So it's interesting because we were really disappointed when they give you a projected number
right.
to build your consolidated grant off of. When we got our projected number, I was like, our number is the same as last year, and we're adding all these kids. Like, we've got to be qualifying for more money. And they kept saying, well, it's based on last year's numbers. Don't worry. When they reconcile, it'll go up. Okay, great. We like that, right?
We like that.
We like to plan for
unexpected
one thing,
money.
More money. And then when they reconciled, they realized that the federal money had all gone down this year, and everybody dropped by thousands, and we lost $11. So we actually were
budgeted well.
Yeah.
Not to take a big hit.
Yeah. It was a very interesting.
And for the next fiscal year's budget, I mean, would you be were we conservative in the federal allotment?
Yeah, generally speaking, when we budget these out, we're looking at, correct me if I'm wrong, Zeke, but I believe it was around 93 or 95% or whatever previous year's funds.
Right.
So but we try to build in cushions along the way from a budget perspective every turn.
Mm-hmm.
It's conservative, as best as possible.
That's good.
And then, of course,
obviously the state and federal level, we're not sure what's going to happen.
Right.
We are not sure.
That's correct.
You're not sure. Any other questions, comments? May I have a motion to accept the finance report?
So moved.
Second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion is passed. The report is accepted. Okay, thank you. Nice job. Governance, we do have an annual meeting date, correct?
We do. So as opposed to the Thursday, May 25th, which is the day before the holiday break there, the annual meeting date was changed to May 23rd at 6 p.m.
Okay.
And notification has been sent to the stakeholder body, if you will.
Okay.
Both in hard copy, electronic copy, social media copy, so we have very well alerted the community that there has been a change to that date.
And the school was kind enough to put it on the calendar. So
we've got coverage.
Great. We have done our due diligence to ensure that our community is aware.
And we will be voting on the bylaws.
Yes.
We will.
Okay. Anything else from governance? Any questions? Thank you for all your hard work, for sure. Development.
I, actually, real quick.
Yes.
Do we have any applicants for parent director at this moment?
So far, we have two applications for parent directors.
Yes.
Thank you. That just came in yesterday, so I will share those with the governance here later on today.
At your committee meeting. Okay,
yes.
Good. So development, you have a big day coming up?
Yes, that's one of two items I want to cover. This coming Tuesday, May 2nd at 9 a.m., you all have probably received emails about this. We've got this big community event here at FSMA here in the lower school. We've invited neighbors, neighboring businesses, churches, you know, YMCA, Ministry of Caring. We've also invited elected officials, other community leaders. So far, the turnout's looking pretty good, particularly among influential people. You know, we sent a follow-up on Monday. We'll be doing more outreach today. But one thing I want to ask of all of you, as I did in my email this week, is that please, please, please do your personal outreach. You know, if every one of us can get one kind of key person here, I think the event will be a big success. Again, we've already got some prominent people coming, but remember the purpose of this is to, we're putting our best foot forward in the community. The school's been here for 3 years. We've had a tremendous start, but as you know, as Courtney puts it, you know, we want to be an important member of this community, we want to be a contributing member of this community, and we want people to know about us. And this is one way we feel like we can, to those who haven't really gotten to know us, to introduce ourselves and to introduce, frankly, the impact and convey the success that the school's had. We're proud of that, and we're proud to be a downtown school. And we want to convey all that to our fellow members of the community. So, Angela, I don't know if you want to. Angela was kind enough to circulate the minutes. The most recent we've had kind of a working group on this, you know, subcommittee of development that includes some parents who are involved in the community. Angela, I don't know if you want to speak at all to some of those details.
Just to really encourage everybody to A, be there, and B, bring a VIP or someone who can benefit from awareness of what we do here and be able to be an evangelist for us in a positive way, mm-hmm. Especially because the legislative season is in high gear right now. So the more positive stories that folks are aware of that happen here every day, because we're lucky to have very positive stories happening in the heart of the city, and being able to see it and experience it helps people to share it. So, you know, as you know, just to parrot my friend down there, each one of us with one VIP is huge. We've had a huge success. So, and VIP is defined as, you know, a neighbor, a legislator, a business leader, someone who can benefit in the education world from seeing Montessori mixed with responsive classroom, mixed with public school education, mixed with the choice that parents have made to send their children here. And of course, you know, we would love to see donors as well. The outcome that we're hoping for is awareness, positive sharing, mentors, and also financial resources. So, you know, that's pretty much the definition of success for this. The machinations of it, if you will, are all going to rely on us as too. There is a working committee, but all of us have a familiarity with the school that are going to be inviting. The children will be there doing Montessori moments. We're going to have morning meetings so that they can understand responsive classroom. We're really going to put our best foot forward to show our uniqueness. And then a tour, if people are available, will really let them see it in action. So while we're trying to impart really important information, we're trying to do it in ways that are unique to us. So it lasts, and it stays, and it makes an impact. So the impact goes back out to the community. I think this will more than likely not be our last rodeo. There'll be, you know, hopefully smaller sub-segments out of that as we really step up our game from a community relations standpoint. There's great stories happening here every day. We need to broadcast them further than our front doors. So, you know, stories that you all have to share are important, and we'll be working on that as a board. So thank you all for your time and attention. You may be getting an email also to bring a dozen donuts, so stay tuned. or a box of Joe or whatever.
Just don't ask our guests to bring a dozen donuts.
No, that's not the point. We just, you know. Everybody's working really hard right
I
now.
I know.
Trying
we'll
to pull
we'll
up
be
a lot
more
of
than
things.
Happy to do that. Absolutely. We're looking forward to it. So everybody has May 2nd on their calendar, right?
Is
All
there,
right.
Is there an end time to the event?
It'll be about 10.
9 to 10 is the plan.
Okay.
Yeah.
And are we going to have name tags so that people can recognize us as board members and make it easier to introduce
They'll
ourselves?
They'll have name tags. We'll have name tags, correct? That's, everybody will?
That is it, yes. We will take care of that.
Okay.
And there is going to be a sign-up genius then for...
If someone still would like to come forward and create one, we will have a sign-up genius. If not, I'm going to just send an email to the board
just
and
bring
say,
the box.
Can you please bring... Yeah. We need these things. Can you please bring?
Okay.
I'm still waiting for some response. The fabulous spring break was also a break. It was like the whole world was quiet. So we're running, which is good. It'll be fine. It always works out.
I do have one comment. I would like... Angela, to thank you on the detail of your planning meeting notes. That helps me understand how much work is put into this kind of event, and Jeb as well, but sharing the meeting notes really helps as opposed to just a synopsis of, you know, the event. That really helps show the detail of the work involved in an event like this. So any other event, this could be used as a guideline. So just wanted to share.
Thank you. You filled my bucket.
Hopefully, we fill everybody's bucket here because we all work so hard to make this best.
And then the other, and there's some other things going on. Obviously, we're going to be, you know, Mila and our committee will be looking at the next step in the annual fund going ahead for the remainder of the school year. But the biggest thing, of course, is we have an upper school now. We have seventh graders starting in August. We have major work that needs to be done. So we have put forward, we've received some grants already. We have two requests out there to local foundations, fairly significant. So good things are happening there, but of course, not everything's gonna come through foundations. So Courtney was wise enough to suggest putting together a kind of a primer, a proposal that we can distribute to potential donors and other community members on just what is this capital campaign. And I encourage you to take a look at this and familiarize yourself. Obviously, I've distributed in the past a kind of one-pager talking points on the capital campaign, but this has much more detail.
This isn't meant for general distribution. Yeah. This was created, we had a possible funder in, and he said to me, you know, I want some more information about what you guys are doing. I'd love to know, I'd love to know kind of what's going on. It was kind of, we created it kind of in response to that, to be able to send him something. I will tell you, I sent this to him, and within days, he responded with a check for $15,000. So the effort in creating this paid off hugely for us. Again, it's meant for those bigger contexts that we want to be able to say, like, here's what we're doing, it's real. It's not just like, hey, where you have this project going on. But it's not a mass distribution campaign. This is really targeted for our school. Yeah. So it's not something that you'll see go home in backpacks. That's not the intention of this campaign. So I just wanted to be clear about kind of the intent for this document and why it was created. But it does have a lot of great information, I think, around what we're trying to do and what our ideals are. Remember, this is built around us trying to create kind of the ideal scenario and kind of what's going on with that. So, you know, it would be lovely if all of this came to fruition. We'll see what happens with funding to make
this
that happen.
This is really, really great. So, thank you guys so much.
Yeah, they're yours. Mm-hmm. We brought a copy for you today.
Yeah, this is wonderful. Good way to approach someone.
And we can just come see you, Courtney, or reach out to you if there's as needed in the targeted area.
Yep.
Excellent.
Yep.
Thank you.
And needless to say, if you know of any individuals or corporations or anything, any kind of leads about, hey, they might, I mean, obviously if it's a financial contribution, great, but even, you know, we've talked about this event, we've talked about there are foundations that sometimes contribute towards catering for an event, you know.
Right.
So any leads like that, even if you think it's far-fetched, let me know, you know.
Sure.
Because you never know. I mean, you know, Courtney's, I cite this, you know, Courtney's 3 years ago sat on a train next to somebody, told the story, and, you know, a five-figure check came in, you know. It's so... You know, we're always evangelists for the school in general, but you know, in a way, there's always, you never know who you'd be talking to your dentist, and it could be someone who funds the school. You just never know. So, you know, please familiarize yourself with this stuff, and you know, and any leads you may have, let us know, please.
Yeah.
I think also to the awareness that there's a lot of matching fund money that's out there in the world that companies don't distribute and want to. So anything you can look into at your own companies or encourage anyone, any parents that you're speaking with when you hear where they work, if you know of it, and I think we'll be doing some research to figure out kind of what is available, because some of our parents don't know what's available.
Is any of this on social media at all?
So it's interesting. Yesterday, Angela and I went to a workshop on crowdfunding and social media and those types of campaigns, and did a workshop on kind of best practices and best ideas around that,
right.
And got a lot of information around what works in social media, what doesn't, to
and
be able to...
a component. I think that's a really important part for all of us to remember. It's not the end-all, be-all. Didn't mean to interrupt you, but I didn't want to lose that thought. It's a component of the program. It can't be the only thing that gets done.
No, my thinking was there are many people that I speak to that will ask me about the school, and I get all excited and tell them what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And even though they don't have a child here, they follow us, and they say... You know, I follow you on social media, so I did know that. And so they have good questions, and then I'm able to field those answers. So that's why I asked that question, because it's another way to help to help us talk. It's just, so I agree with you, Angela, but it's a good technique for us. So.
So we have some thoughts and plans kind of around that moving forward, and a possible campaign for the fall and thinking through that. But we were able to attend.
Good.
I think it was a really meaningful workshop yesterday around that, the Del Rio Charitable Network sponsored for a new organization that's doing crowdfunding.
Good.
And doing it in a smart way.
I think they also brought up really enlightening things to really just think about in terms of fundraising in the day and age that we live in.
Yes.
And so there will be good follow up from it, and we'll be able to synopsize it and share it. Excuse me.
Yeah, and where people's hearts are, we are all givers. We know that. But where's our heart, and what then do we feel we would like to give to? So that's great. Thank you. This is wonderful.
This is very well done.
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
You for your time and effort, Courtney, those who worked on that. That's
and
great.
Hi, and Jen. Everybody jump in fast.
Yeah, well written, it looks like, after we throw it. Excited.
I think it points out the places where you can help really well and the places where we've done well.
It's a nice balance.
I'm happy to see our company is listed as one that matches, and I would be interested to see if there's a way I could possibly connect, say, someone from our public affairs department or something, to provide them with a brief synopsis of, hey, look, here's an opportunity.
Bring them on Tuesday.
maybe that's
but if not, maybe just an appointment to say, can I talk to you about this is what I noticed, you know, those small little intimate groups sometimes really work,
because someone might say to them, hey, I do my matching funds, I'd like it to go to a good organization, who do you know,
right?
You want them to be able to say, like, hey, there's a public school down the street, talk to Beth Carter about it. Like, you want them to have that in, not to say to force it on people, but at least that it becomes a part of the conversation that people look at. I know when we worked with the Delaware Community Foundation in the beginning, who does tons of educational grants, we went to them and said, how do we get on your list to just, they can't tell people it's all the people who invest their money and people earmark it and they make that happen. They can't tell people where to send it, but he said, people all the time will say, what's a great place to send me your money? He's like, you got to get your name in that conversation. Okay, how do we do that? And so it's not necessarily that we can tell people where to do those pieces, but we can lead them to them. And the other piece is to be able to say to our families that work for some of those places, like, your contribution of $50 is really $100 to our school. That speaks to people.
Sure,
if you know that you're given $50 and it's really $100 in the pocket of the school, that I think makes you want to give that chunk of change to make an impact. And so we're figuring out, how do we communicate those things better? How do we market those things better? Just to help people be smart and feel like they're contributing at whatever level it is.
And you made a great point, too. So here's a great stat for you, especially as a board member. when it's a one-to-one communication, it garners 25% more response to funding than if it's just a social media blast, which gives you a 2.5% return.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think those are the pieces where you really then understand, you know, that random conversation can turn into $100. And no's are free is like my biggest mantra right now.
Well, and to reiterate that, like I got invited to this event yesterday three or four times and was like, you know, it's a workshop on fundraising. I'll try to get there. The guy who was running it personally called me. I was like, Liz, I got to go. He called me and said, please come. I showed up. It was really worth it. It's the same thing for Tuesday. It's the same thing for events. We pick up the phone. We make personal contact.
Mm-hmm.
You show up. So it was. It spoke. That reminded me really clearly of the reason I showed up there was because he called me.
Mm-hmm.
Took him 2 seconds. He didn't even talk to me. He left a message at the office and said, please tell Courtney, I'd really like you to be at this event. All right. Awesome.
There you go.
So,
all right, so we know what to do.
Yep.
Thank you, guys. We're all excited about Tuesday. Can't wait to see how it turns out. And so is there anything else?
No, that's it.
All right, so good. So the head of school report, we have Liz here. Liz ready?
Liz is here. Yes, she's ready.
All right.
One of the things Yvonne and I talked about with the reports is we actually really talked about liking last month, how I brought something, we looked at some data, we talked about some pieces, mm-hmm. rather than the like one-pager of field trips and things. So we're going to try to do a balance of those. So some sessions where it's just more, we're going to bring a topic. Right now, the relevant topic is Smarter Balanced because we're right in the middle of testing. And I think it's something that before we get to the scores, I want you guys to have some knowledge around what it is, what it looks like, just a little more of the nitty-gritty. So I asked Liz to come today and speak through some high-level pieces around the Smarter Balanced state testing just to give you a sense of what that is. So I think that she was ready, but she left.
Isn't this ERBs? Or is that something
different?
No.
It's a different test. That's private school.
Yeah.
Smarter Balance is about 20 states that take it. It's a standards-based test. There's two different tests that happen across the country. Smarter Balance is one of them.
And what grade?
Starting in third grade.
Third grade.
Yep. Is she coming?
She is. She's.
Do you guys want to pull up to the table? I'm going to pull up a chair for
that. It's cold over here.
Yeah, come over.
We'll
pull
you
up a
chair. Morning, darling. That looks like the queen's chair from right here.
Oh, thanks.
Yep. Says it all, doesn't it? And humble.
I love it.
Did you take your cape off before you
came? I did.
Good.
Thank
you very much. No. All
today she was born.
Okay. So, Courtney, would you like to introduce Liz and
everybody here?
Well, we're recording at this moment. So Liz Madden is the educational director at First St. Montessori, and she's here to talk about Smarter Balance.
So I wanted to talk about Smarter Balance for you as the board, more from the student perspective, because I know as a board you get briefed by Courtney on the scores and how we do and the higher level piece of Smarter. And I think a lot of people don't know what is it. You know it's a test. You've heard it's hard. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much it, right? And you know that we do better in ELA than we do in math, as does every other school in the state. So from that, I wanted to whittle down a little bit as to what does this actually look like for students who are taking it. So students across the state in grades 3 and in our school up through grade 6 and next year 7th will take the test. It has an ELA, which is English Language Arts component, and a math component. And these are directly related to the Common Core state standards. So it's measuring a student's ability to show what they know and show what they can do of the Common Core state standards. And it's actually made up of two different parts. So for math, there's the computer adaptive test and the performance task. For ELA, there's the same thing, computer adaptive and performance task. So I want to talk for a minute about what that means. For example, a student who is in fourth grade will get questions on a fourth grade level. The test for that CAT part, we call it, is adaptive, meaning if a student is answering them correctly, it's going to raise or increase the difficulty level up to 2 grade levels above where the student is, so it would go up to the 6th grade level. If a student isn't answering questions correctly, it's going to go down 2 grade levels, or up to 2 grade levels down. So really there's a huge range within that test, a 4-year range of the types of questions a student might see, depending on how they're answering the questions. So in that way, that makes it an adaptive test. So that portion is about 40-some-odd questions long, and it takes students about 2 days. What I mean by that is they sit there for about an hour 15 on one day, do as much as they can. They pause the test. They go back to it the next day. We don't like kids to sit for more than about an hour or so per session because they just get fried. So they hit back at it the next day. It's not timed so they can take as long or as many days as they want to. And we do have some kids that take more time than others. Some rush through it. We call them clickers. And the teachers try to catch the clickers and slow them down and remind them about those test-taking strategies that we talked about or that they talked about. And then there's others that really take their time and think through it deeply. So really, it's a test-taking opportunity or an experience for the kids. The other section to that, so I talked about the computer adaptive section. The other section is the performance task. And I think people hear about that they hear about it all the time and don't really know what it is. What the heck is a performance task? I brought some examples for you. So I brought a math and an ELA performance task. The math one that I brought for you is at the 4th grade level, and the ELA I brought at a 5th grade level. For the performance task, kids are given also about 2 days. Again, it's untimed, so they can take as long as they want. But they're given a lot of information, and they're asked to make sense of the information and then give it back out. So I'll talk about ELA, for example. So the one that I'll pass out to you, you can take one and pass it on. I made 10 copies, so that's enough. Students are asked to watch a YouTube video, and it pops right up in the test, and read 2 different articles. In this example, it's about pollution on Earth and pollution in space. So they're asked to watch the video, read 1 article about pollution on Earth, 1 article about pollution in space, and then they have to kind of meld all that information together that they got from those 3 sources and put it together and answer questions about it. So the first day, they have a few questions about it. And if you turn this over to the 2nd page of the ELA one, you'll see on that 2nd page, it shows you 3 questions that the students have to answer. So they're short answer questions. For example, read the statement, humans are learning from their mistakes involving pollution. Do you agree with the statement? Explain your answer using evidence from the video or text to support your opinion. So it's not a quick, I can answer that in 2 sentences kind of thing. They have to really dig deep about the information that they read and watched, consolidate it in their mind, and give it back out. The next day, they come back to it with the same 3 sources, and they have to write a 5-paragraph essay. So that essay topic is also here. It's not easy. This test is not an easy test. But the point of Common Core is to get kids thinking deeply and using those higher order thinking skills. And that's what this test measures, is those higher order thinking skills. It's not just true, false, yes, no, multiple choice. There are some of those in the computer adaptive section, but this performance task really asks them to dig deeply. I also, math is organized the same way. So I have an example here of the math performance task for you. Ignore that box on the top. That's codes for the teachers so they know what it means. But that box on the bottom where it starts with Mrs. McCrary, that's the information they're given. And then you can see on the next few pages what they have to do. They're given some information and they have to graphically represent or create 2-3 different rabbit pens of different volumes. It's it's an intense test for sure.
Something I don't want to think about at 8:15.
I think for your perspective, knowing beyond just what those scores are and how our third graders or fourth graders are scoring on that, I wanted to give you a picture of what it actually looks like for kids. Mila?
Is it dictated by the state how long they're given or what their parameters are for how they have to be administered?
There are some parameters that are given.
Okay.
The testing window runs from March through June. Within that, we set our own test schedule. So we've played a little bit with what that schedule looks like. The first 2 years, we really spaced it out over the course of a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, this is four sections of the test. They would have it spaced out over a few months. We found that it was interrupting the learning too much, and that it was better for kids to consolidate it a little bit so they have a week of math and a week of ELA. Okay. So they do the CAT and the performance task in 1 week, for ELA and another week for math.
Mm-hmm.
And that way it kind of shortens the window for the kids so they can focus more and give their full effort at it.
And what are they being told? What are the kids being told surrounding this test? Just sort of like information or what it means?
So it's interesting because it's different at different grade levels. For third graders, it is their first experience with a test like this.
Mm-hmm.
So for those kids, we tell them this is a practice year. You know, you're going in, you do the best you can, but it's a year for you to learn what this test looks like, and you just do your best. We're just practicing. So it's really low-key for them. And not that it's not low-key for the others, but we start to build up the importance a little more. Now they've seen it, you know, in fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, they've seen it. They have an understanding of what it is, and then you can really start talking about the test-taking strategies, and the teachers do a lot.
I wish I had some examples, because we do performance tests. We practice what a math performance test looks like, and my sixth graders are outrageous how they answer these questions, and I wish I brought some examples, because it's extremely detailed and high-order thinking. Really have to understand how to explain your thinking. That's what it is.
And our sixth graders know that if they're looking at different high schools, their high schools are going to look back to see those scores. They're looking for consistency over time. When they're applying to high schools, they're going to look and say, all right, did the last couple years, are they pretty consistent? Where are they scoring? They're not just looking for a kid that goes, oh, it's eighth grade, now I'm going to put my effort into the test because I want to go to a high school. So we can start to prep them for that. It's this really delicate balance of preparing kids that it's important without it being creating anxiety and stress for them. And so we've tried to shift our culture. I think the first 2 years we actually
downplayed it.
Yeah.
We really downplayed it the first 2 years.
And we found that kids are saying, like, it doesn't matter. Kids would tell us, like, I just clicked through the whole thing. Like,
I just wanted to be done so I could read my book.
Yeah. And so we had to start to build our culture
a little bit differently this year. A little bit more.
But again, it's that balance of not making it, it's not life or death, but it is an important data point. It's one data point that's important for us as a school. It can't be the only piece. And that's the piece that we continue to communicate with parents, is that they get this incredible report. And it shows straight up numbers, and it is a little intimidating when your kid lands in different places. You have to take that in comparison with what you just learned at your child's conference and their report card and go, all right, on this data point, they're doing this. What are they doing at all of these pieces to get a well-rounded picture of your child?
And that's just one way we use it, is to look at individual kids. Tests like these were really built, though, to look at how institutions were doing. So we look at it as, how are we doing across the board? Because we can see trends. We're not looking at just one student. We can look across the board to see, all right, how are our students performing in math at the different grade levels, in ELA at the different grade levels? What do we need to hit more at?
What do we need to do?
What do we do well? So it gives us information as a school about what to do.
They're also used across states and across countries to compare. So
yeah, absolutely.
They're not really supposed to be used in middle school students.
Right. That's not why tests like this were created.
Does FSMA receive the individual scores or just the aggregate scores?
Yeah, we get the individuals too. Yeah.
And I would say, just at the ELA example, there's a reflection too in what is happening in our classrooms. Like, I can see, you know, I'm
as a parent, you
now.
See it.
I can see the preparation and the things that were coming home. So the way that you have presented this to us is actually fabulous for insight, I think, to parents, as the two parent directors sit here and speak to it, because between all of you, you have just defined, you know, here's the child experience, and here is what, as an organization, we get. And by the way, based on this, this is, you know, how our curriculum is impacted and what we do for our kids to prepare them for life, but keep their anxiety at a minimum. That, in this, you know, 7 minutes, what a fantastic view of why this is important. So thank you for that. And it's really happening. Like, I can see how this question could be answered. So to the, you know, to our teacher representative, like, I can definitely see how this ELA question could be answered in a thoughtful way based on what I've seen come home throughout this year. And also the prep that happens on a daily basis. It's fantastic. So
it will never be the be-all, end-all of what we do. Mm-mm. It will never be something that we put crazy weight on for children.
The way I look at it, is this is a practical life skill. Kids need to know how to take tests, for better or worse.
Yes, right.
Whether you agree with testing or don't agree with testing, it's part of our culture and our society. And they need to know how to perform on it so they can be confident moving forward.
Sure, the last thing you want is a kid to show up at the SATs that's never taken a standardized test.
Right.
And is trying to get to college. Like,
yeah.
And then also, I think it's important that we underscore, you know, you mentioned, I think, Courtney, these exams are being, these scores are being examined by high schools.
Yeah, they are.
Particularly given the fact that we're moving into an upper school.
Which, when you think about it, when kids apply to high schools, and having just been through this year, they don't even have the eighth grade scores.
Right.
Those don't come in until the summer. Right. You're already into a high school by then.
That's right.
So they want to see the sixth and seventh grade scores. That's what they're really looking at.
These types of questions that you shared with us, Liz, are practical life.
They are, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Past SATs and all
way.
This is stuff that you have to do in jobs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or at
synthesizing
home.
Synthesizing information.
Agreed.
You
know?
About it.
Yeah.
And that's what Shonda was just doing, taking notes for our meeting.
Right.
And this is practical, I guess.
And the students can also recognize what they don't know,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and feel good about what they do know, so that as the teachers then have their conferences and talk, you know, we know where to move forward, and so they don't get nervous about it. You know?
I think also showing the correlation between preparation and performance.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
This is if you prepare well.
There's a lot of learning in that.
Scores at the end.
You're right.
But
you're right, Karen.
That, if you prepare well while you're taking the test, it doesn't feel so heavy. Because I did hear that comment. I was ready, Mom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, because she's done the ELA portion.
Mm-hmm. And I think that speaks highly to what Courtney was saying about that this school puts the balance on it's important. But we're not going to make kids feel anxious about it. And that's not true everywhere.
So we're still always going to have clickers.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you, our kids, that passage comes up and it's long and they go, click, make it go away. And they go on the
That's human nature, though. That's your
20.
You know,
I'm going to take my chances.
As a school, and how you, what you say to your teachers, what you say to your kids, that's really important. How you're setting your teachers up is important, too, because preparing them in the right way is the other piece, having been a teacher. That's been
adding to that piece, too, and I think going to the school and culture you're talking to, the school is also very supportive of the students, the third, fourth grade, first time taking it, and those who have taken it, and helping them understand. And that trickles down to the second graders who see the third graders. Who I have, you know, once again, like you put that parent teacher hat on, my daughter's second grade, they wrote letters of encouragement.
Yes.
You know, they like to the third graders who are their first time. So they were anxious, but now my second grade daughter who has to get next year, she's not as anxious.
They've survived.
They came back. They survived. They're good.
Nobody was in tears.
Yeah, I think that kind of speaks to that culture and
the
benefit of the Montessori.
Yeah.
So now the second
grade. That's right, with the eighth grade level.
She's conscious of it now.
Mm-hmm.
And she sees them, but now it's like, oh. Like you said,
it's also an interesting rite of passage when you watch the second and third graders, because they see the third graders like, they're the big kids, and they get to take that. And it's almost a rite of passage for them. It just becomes another important piece that created their other incredible rites of passage that I would probably choose over a standardized test.
Some kids do really like testing week, I have to say.
That's
there
true.
Are some that do.
Yeah. That's true. Well, especially if you put into your time and give them half a day. Just heard a Pennsylvania school does that, right? Kids look forward to the testing, so they get a half a day off.
Yes. That's not us.
No, that's not us. I understand.
But the teachers do try to balance different projects and things. The workload looks a little different during those weeks.
Sure.
And that does appeal to kids a little bit.
Yeah, more relaxed.
So is this whole arrangement, does it come from the Department of Education and they coordinate it for the whole state?
It is a state mandated requirement.
Okay.
Scheduling-wise?
No, no, no. Just that we're, say that we're using
that
this
one. That we're using this one, yes.
As opposed
to state requirement.
That other one that's out there. I don't know what the other one is.
Park.
But, okay.
Yeah, all of Delaware uses the Smarter Balance.
And I think 23 states use Smarter Balance.
Although in the public school.
I was just going to say in the public
arena.
And wearing a board hat rather than a parent hat for a minute, I mean, I salute you guys for maintaining that balance, but making sure that it's not underemphasized or not downplayed too much, just because I know it's reductive, and but it is the world we live in, is that scores are, I mean, it's what the state's looking at, it's what prospective parents are looking at, it's what funders are looking at. So.
And it's part of our performance framework.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
And it's we've made a promise that we're going to teach kids what they need to know, and if this is what is determined that they need to know, it's our responsibility that our kids are mastering the things on this test. Does that mean that they have to master them on this test? No.
Right.
But it is a measure that we've said we're going to do something. It's a measure for people to know whether or not we're doing it. And it is important. Yeah. From a leadership point, it's important.
Yeah, I mean, FSA
scores are available when, again?
These will be coming home to parents in July. We are able to see the scores about 2 weeks after they take it.
The individual scores are coming home?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they're mailed in July.
The whole, okay.
So and that's when school-wide scores will come out, too.
Okay, if everything goes well and Smarter Balance is in that area.
They've been getting better every year. The first year was a...
November?
Yeah, it was really late.
It's hard for them.
We're all on a learning curve.
They usually have more than one person score each piece so that they have...
Yeah.
Validity.
So when you get the report, the parents get the report, does it state how the child performs against like a cohort or something?
Against the school, so it gives the school norms and it gives the state norms and it gives those child scores.
And
so
it gives a benchmark of what, there's a score, it's a 0 to 4, a 1 to 4 scale, not zero, 1 to 4 scale. So you get a 1, a 2, a 3, or a 4 that 3 being the benchmark for on or above. So they literally get like 4 bars, 4 different color, and they will rank them within that so you can see kind of where you are in approaching the... It's a full report with numbers and graphs and data, and they get a nice little packet of information.
I could have brought that for you. I didn't think about
it. You can see if they scored advanced at grade level.
Yeah.
Or below.
Approaching grade level or well below.
Or below. Yeah.
And on the adaptive piece, if they're getting it wrong and they start to go down a grade or two and they start to get them right, does it start to come back up?
Mm-hmm.
And the point of that is what?
To try to zero in on what that child's actual level is. So it's not always a right or wrong at the fourth grade level. You know, is this child on the second grade level, third grade level, fourth, fifth? Like, where exactly is that child performing?
And do parents get that information?
They get how the child performed. They don't get to see the range of each individual question and whether they got it right or wrong.
But when it comes out, do they know what their child is?
They know if the child is well below grade level, approaching grade level,
or above.
At or above.
But it doesn't give a specific, your child's reading, you're doing math at a... middle, fifth grade level. It doesn't do that. Not for this. But we share that information, that type of information with parents at conferences and on report cards so that people know where their kids are performing in perspective.
It'll show, like, for reading comprehension, they might have scored 12 out of 14. For another skill, 10 out of whatever. So you can see specifically like that, maybe how many questions they missed in a certain content area or whatever. And then also it gives a big number on that color scale, right? Like, and I think that's in comparison to everybody that has taken the test. Am I correct on that one?
Yeah, that's the normed scale. Yes.
So you get to see that as well.
The conferences are very
Yeah.
So whether you're getting that information off of the test or not, you're getting it at your next conference.
Thank you, Liz.
You're welcome.
This was wonderful. We appreciate it.
Not a problem.
It was super insightful.
And now we understand better.
Good.
Thank you.
When we're looking at our scores. I know you need to go. Any other questions for Liz, or is everybody good? All right.
All right.
Thank you, Liz.
Thank you, dear. Appreciated it.
You want 9:30?
Don't think we have any new business. There are no public comments this morning. So if there's nothing else, may I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The meeting is adjourned at 9:15 a.m. We'll see you at the annual meeting.
So at 9:30, there's a fire drill.